this is really encouraging. We're really excited. This is really good news for us.
Enroll Alaska gets back to signing Alaskans up for health insurance. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, November 13th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a Bethel woman talks about her personal tragedy from the Philippines typhoon.
He died hero though. He saved his wife, my stepmom's life.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority. The Older Persons Action Group, publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families, can be read online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Just 53 Alaskans have selected health insurance plans on healthcare.gov. The federal government released marketplace numbers today for every state. Nationwide, 106,000 people have signed up for plans. That figure includes people who have fully enrolled and people who have a plan in their shopping cart but haven't paid yet. North Dakota is the only state with fewer people in that category than Alaska. But Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius expects to see all the numbers increase a lot in the next several months.
There's no doubt that particularly the early experience with healthcare.gov was enormously frustrating. It is getting better. It's getting better every day. So I'd urge people to visit the site.
Enroll Alaska says it's confident enough in the federal site to begin signing Alaskans up again. The company suspended enrollments on healthcare.gov last month after discovering the subsidy calculations weren't working properly for Alaskans. Chief Operating Officer Tyann Bowling says the federal government has fixed the problem. She says Enroll Alaska signed up one person on the marketplace yesterday, and it only took 20 minutes.
This is really encouraging. We're really excited. Our agents are really excited to get out there into the community and start helping individuals, and this is really good news for us.
Bowling says the company will start deploying more than 24 insurance agents to Walmarts, Sam's Clubs, and hospitals in communities across the state. The country could face a second round of automatic budget cuts if Congress can't agree on a spending plan by year's end. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski said at a hearing today the sequestration cuts already imposed on the Pentagon are throwing the military off its geostrategic goals.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm so concerned that in an effort to chase the dollars, in an effort to drive down costs, We are putting our country, we are putting our national defense in jeopardy, because decisions are being driven by sequestration, and we're not keeping our eye on the bigger picture.
Among the unmet needs, Murkowski says, are new rescue helicopters for the Alaska Air National Guard. Military service chief said last week that sequestration is forcing them to cut programs that will ultimately leave the country less prepared to counter global adversaries. It's unclear how many thousands of people lost their lives in the typhoon that hit the Philippines, but Bethel's small Filipino population has been desperately trying to reach family back home to make sure they're okay, KYUK's Angela Denning Barnes reports.
The Philippines has over 7,000 tropical islands, a far cry from the Arctic tundra of Bethel. But Bethel is where about 30 Filipinos, including Gwata Thatcher, call home. She moved to Bethel 13 years ago, and now the petite woman with long black hair sits clutching a tissue as she talks about her father who died in the storm.
My brother messaged me on Facebook and said that I need to call him right away. And then I called him and find out that he was dead. I was like, maybe they got the wrong person, maybe it wasn't him.
Her uncle confirmed it was her father. He lived on Bantayun Island, where his house collapsed on him. The low-lying island is known for its white sand beaches, clear water, and abundant fish, but likely hundreds have perished there. Nearly all of the island's homes were destroyed. Thatcher has wanted to make funeral arrangements for her father, but there's no infrastructure. She's left with this thought.
He died here, although he saved his wife's, my stepmom's life.
Thatcher's other family lives in Cebu Province and survived the storm with only damages to their property.
It's hard to call them. It can't get hold, especially the signal over there. So it's very hard to keep in touch with your family back home.
Poor communication had Carmi Lautenschlager on pins and needles throughout the storm.
I keep on trying to call like every minute. For 2 days I keep on trying to call, and then I didn't talk to anybody. That's why I keep on crying what happened to them, you know.
Lautenschlager has been in Bethel less than a year. Her family lives in Leyte, neighboring Tacloban, which was hit with 200-mile-per-hour winds. Her family's home lost its roof, but Lautenschlager counts herself lucky.
It's fine. The house can be fixed.
Her real worry is that her parents might not be able to survive without power.
They said the electricity there will be back in 6 months.
6 months?
Yeah, so I don't know of how they... I told my parents if they can survive, I'm going to send them to Manila, I think.
Manila is a large city further from the devastation. A few hundred miles south in Cebu Province, Glenda Swope's family survived the high winds. Swope has lived in Bethel for 9 years. Although she was able to keep in contact with her family by telephone, she had trouble sleeping at night.
I was terrified. I was so terrified and was crying too.
She knew the storm was bad. She could hear it for herself.
Because my sister put the phone out, you know, like she put it outside.
And what did it sound like through the phone?
Sound like a jet that is going to, you know, explode.
Swope is counting her blessings. She says the worst of the storm hit during the day and at low tide. Her parents planned ahead, covering their windows with plywood and their roof with sandbags. But not everyone could afford to be so lucky. There's a lot of poverty in the Philippines, with people living under grass roofs and some just out on the street, says Swope. And there's overcrowding, like Lapu-Lapu City, her hometown.
The size is comparable to Bethel. The population is almost 300,000.
And Bethel's just over 6,000.
Yes, just imagine that.
Swope and others in the tight-knit Bethel community continue to worry about the victims getting the food and water they need. They're not sure that the emergency goods are being distributed fairly. But they plan to do what little they can right now. They intend to hold a fundraising garage sale this weekend, with profits going to the victims. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Fairview residents celebrate the successes and acknowledge the challenges of their neighborhood.
Kind of want less stealing, and like, they need to make a couple more skate parks.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Service information at SmileAlaska.com.
Fire crews responded to a fire today at the Bethel School, which houses preschool through 2nd grade. KYUK's Ben Matheson has the story.
Crews went out at about 12:20 with 3 firefighters, a water truck, an ambulance, and 2 backup city water trucks. Bill Howell is a captain for the Bethel Fire Department. He says upon arrival, they found that a detached 2nd grade classroom, portable number 4, was showing smoke.
We found the building to be charged with heat. We had a heavy fire in one of the restrooms, and the firefighters at the scene were able to extinguish that fire before it caught the rest of that building on fire.
Early reports indicated it was possible that not all were accounted for, but school leaders and fire crews soon had everyone counted. One person was sent to the hospital to be checked out for smoke inhalation. All the students were evacuated from the detached classrooms. ME school principal Joshua Gill says a quick response by the teacher proved critical.
Mrs. Hoffman could not have done a more perfect job. It was a very hot fire. It was a very quick fire. I really credit Ms. Hoffman. She saved those kids' lives. She got them out of the building. She kept them calm. She did a great job.
Gill says the building is pretty much a loss, and they're working to find another classroom for Thursday's class. No flames escaped the bathroom, but Captain Howell says the heat and smoke were enough to cause damage in the classroom.
Everything inside the building was damaged with smoke. Much of the inside of the building was also damaged by heat. A lot of the expensive fixtures and furnishings in there were damaged by heat, like the smart board and the projectors and things like that.
The exact cause of the fire is still under investigation. The fire department could not say whether or not it was started by a person. The students were all okay, but several of their coats were too smoky to wear home. Gill says they did finish off the school day.
We did a lot of games and things to keep kids, to keep the spirit up and keep the worries down. Staff here did a great job of collaborating together.
The Bethel Fire Department is continuing its investigation into the cause of the fire. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
2 weeks after the Arctic Hunter ran aground outside Unalaska, state officials are estimating that the boat has released up to 6,000 gallons of diesel fuel into the water. KUCB's Annie Ropeek reports.
The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation is basing the estimate on reports from the crew of the crab boat. The crew reported they were carrying 5 loaded fuel tanks. Salvagers have inspected 4 of them. Some tanks contained only water or traces of fuel. Jade Gamble with the ADEC says some were empty, like the one that should have contained 3,500 gallons of diesel.
There's a hole in the tank and water is, they could hear water surging in with the waves.
Gamble says any lost fuel probably spilled in the first few hours after the accident, and once it was released, the diesel dissipated quickly in rough seas.
It is harder to see than like a crude oil or engine oil or something like that. It doesn't make as thick a layer. And when it's real silty and real windy and you have waves crashing, it is really hard to identify what's a sheen and what might just be the surface of the water.
While it is a pollutant, the diesel couldn't form a slick like the kind that can coat and harm wildlife. Gamble says the ADC may never know how much fuel was lost, but some was recovered. Resolve Magone Marine Services separated 5,000 gallons of diesel out of a fuel water mix they pumped out of the crab boat in the days after the accident. Salvage crews will be looking for fuel in the remaining tank when they return to the wreck late this week. They'll start trying to get the vessel off the rocks once fuel recovery is complete. In Unalaska, I'm Annie Ropeek.
Several organizations around the state have recently asked Governor Parnell to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, including the Anchorage NAACP, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and the Alaska Chamber. The Sitka Assembly didn't go so far as endorsing Medicaid expansion, but at its meeting last week, the Assembly passed a resolution asking Parnell and the state legislature to fully consider the benefits to Alaskan communities of expanding Medicaid to cover a larger share of the state's poorest residents. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The U.S. Supreme Court's ruling on the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, in the summer of 2012, left open the possibility for states to opt out of the law's Medicaid provision. Alaska was one of the states to bring that lawsuit, and Governor Parnell remains vocal in his opposition to the law. But he hasn't officially said no to the Medicaid option, not yet. He's mostly worried about having to pick up the bill. Here's what he told me when he visited Sitka back in October.
I can't trust the government, the federal government, to keep its word. I think I can trust the Obama administration that they're going to fund this for the next 2 or 3 years. I don't have a problem with that. It's what happens after that.
Parnell's got until December 15th to decide whether to accept the federal government's offer to increase the number of residents eligible for Medicaid. That's when he submits his budget to the legislature. The Sitka Assembly did not share the governor's concern. They mainly wanted to send a message that the bottom line was about getting health coverage for Alaskans too poor to buy it on their own. That and the actual bottom line. This is Deputy Mayor Matt Hunter.
A lot of the people who would be benefited by this still seek care in Sitka and receive care in Sitka for free because no one pays their bills, except the rest of us who pay our bills, which are marked up to cover their bills. So we're all paying for it, and this is a would be a huge economic boost. We look at $1 million of charity care a year at Sitka Community Hospital alone. That's one of our two hospitals. That's a lot of money that would be coming into town that isn't otherwise.
But the Assembly also recognized that the Affordable Care Act was at the heart of an ongoing partisan struggle in Washington, D.C., a struggle where few have been willing to give up ground, even if it directly benefits low-income citizens or the disabled. According to former Commissioner of Health and Social Services Myra Munson, 41,500 Alaskans will be covered if the state participates in the Medicaid expansion. Assemblymember Pete Esquiro asked City Administrator Mark Gorman for his opinion on the issue. Gorman, who's had a 30-year career in public health, said there was no doubt that the expansion would benefit Sitkans and local hospitals, but...
Where there is reluctance to go in this direction, state houses are run by Republican governors, and I think it goes back to the issue that it's largely a partisan debate.
Assemblymember Ben Maiasato said there has been no time in the last 40 years that healthcare has not been a partisan debate. He supported the grassroots nature of the resolution.
What it will do, if enough communities pass this and get it out there, I think this is more ammunition for the governor to rethink his decision.
Mike Reif was more trusting than the governor of the Obama administration's funding plan. He called it a pretty good deal for states. Pete Esquiro hesitated, but eventually cast a yes vote. The resolution passed 6-0. Mayor Mim McConnell, who sponsored the resolution with Phyllis Hackett, was out on a family emergency. According to data supplied in the assembly packet, 18 states have adopted the Medicaid expansion. 5 are leaning yes, 5 are leaning no, 10 are firm no's, and 12, including Alaska, are undecided. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Governor Sean Parnell has named Joe Balash as his Natural Resources Commissioner. Balash has served as acting commissioner since September, and he was previously a deputy in the department. He was one of the governor's point people on the recent overhaul of the state's oil tax system. Balash replaces Dan Sullivan, who left his commissioner position to run for U.S. Senate.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
The Association of Fundraising Professionals Alaska Chapter thanks everyone who helped make this year's Alaska Philanthropy Day celebration great. Congratulations to the 10 Alaskans who were honored for outstanding generosity to their communities, and thanks to the many sponsors and volunteers who made possible a one-of-a-kind celebration. This message sponsored by Alaska Public Media and AFP Alaska.
Some 60 tribal entities from across the country, including more than a dozen from Alaska, have written to ask President Obama to pay them long overdue contract shortfalls. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
In June 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the government illegally failed to pay tribes the full price of contracts for 20 years. Now, 17 months later, the federal government still hasn't paid up. In an October 28th letter, tribal organizations say the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Indian Health Service even documented the shortfalls in reports to Congress, naming how much each tribe was underpaid. One of the signers to the letter, Dan Winkleman, is a vice president for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation.
My beef with President Obama and his administration is that back in 2008, when he was in Crow Agency, Montana, he campaigned specifically for trying to get full funding for the Indian Health Services. And when it has come to contract support costs, he hasn't done that.
Winkleman says not only is the federal government stalling on paying tribes, the Office of Management and Budget is working to outlaw their claims.
Congress is a major player in this, and that's why tribes have been advocating for the administration to work with Congress and put in a bill forward to make these payments. And instead, what has happened is the Obama administration actually put a bill forward to cap and to deny our contract support cost claims.
Winkleman says the federal agency's debt is significant, citing a $40 million settlement the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation received for contract support costs from 1991 to 2004. Signers to the letter include Chugachmut, Tanana Chiefs Conference, Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes, Arctic Slope Native Association, and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. A spokesperson for the Indian Health Service says the agency has no comment at this time. The Bureau of Indian Affairs did not respond to inquiries in time for this broadcast. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
The Olympic Flame traveled by dog sled through the capital of Chukotka in Russia earlier this week. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, the torch was carried by Russian musher Michael Telpin.
A thick crowd lined the streets of Anadyr to cheer for musher Michael Telpin and his 6 round, fluffy sled dogs on Monday as they carried the Olympic torch through Chukotka's capital. Telpin and his lead dogs, Ivakal and Bumpa, completed an arduous Red Lantern run of the Yukon Quest back in 2012. This past March, he drove his team under Nome's Burled Arch to finish a rookie run of the Iditarod. His travels in Alaska are part of an education program called Racing Beringia. Milo Porsold is the executive director.
Michael is the most accomplished dog master in all of Russia. He's a four-time winner of the Nadezhda Hope race, which is the toughest race in all of the Eurasian continent. And then he is the only Russian musher to have run both and finished both the Yukon Quest and the Iditarod.
Telpin comes from a remote village 1,000 miles north of Anadyr. Travel to and from the region's capital is difficult, so he was only able to bring his two lead dogs. In Anadyr, he borrowed four other dogs for his team. Porsold says he spent a few weeks training them together for the torch run.
He said the dogs ran as fast as he had ever seen them run before. Like he'd never run that fast in any races in Chukotka or Kamchatka or Alaska, that he basically just had to, you know, hold the brake on the entire time.
Five torchbearers were selected to represent the different regions of Chukotka. Porsold says members of the native community where Telpin lives have been celebrating since he was chosen.
For Michael, he used very, very strong words about the pride that he felt on behalf of his people, that this story of the Olympic flame, that'll be a story that'll be, you know, significant to him and his big family and to his children.
The Olympic flame is set to reach Sochi for opening ceremonies February 7th. By the time it arrives, it will have been the longest ever torch relay in Olympic history. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
When I accepted a job in Anchorage more than a dozen years ago, my new boss told me the neighborhood I'd be working in was sketchy. She said signs of illicit sex and drug use, along with alcohol debris, would be common in the parking lot, and that homeless people would sleep on the porch. It was all true. That was my introduction to Fairview. But last Saturday, I glimpsed a very different version of the neighborhood through the stories of smiling residents who love Fairview, faults and all.
We're spending a lot of time trying to reimagine this community. You know, the idea that people get when they come through is kind of what they see at 13th and Gamble.
S.J. Klein is the president of the Fairview Community Council. The idea he's referring to is one of a neighborhood racked by drugs, theft, and prostitution. But Klein, his family, and others here on this snowy morning see a neighborhood with a lot of history worth caring for.
It was an independent city 30, 40 years ago, and in one of the first cities in South Central Alaska. After downtown Anchorage, then there was another, basically, township here.
The day's festivities were part of a civic engagement event organized by the University of Alaska Anchorage. In the Fairview Rec Center parking lot, people gathered around canopies for a few hours at a pop-up museum. The idea was to bring residents and others interested in the area together to reminisce, share pictures and mementos, as well as plan for positive change and a better image for one of the city's oldest neighborhoods. Klein and his family brought old wooden skis to the pop-up museum.
Kind of wanted to highlight the history of the ski area that was in Fairview. The first ski area in South Central was the Anchorage Ski Bowl. And so from 3rd Avenue down to Ship Creek, that's where everybody in town would go skiing.
Klein says it's now referred to as Party Hill, where inebriates congregate to drink. He says a group of residents are working to turn it into a ski hill again. Undaunted by pitfalls, Klein sees the possibilities. Bailey Black agrees. She says it's less expensive to live in Fairview, and there's a good community feel. She and her husband Duane and daughter Lucy were enjoying hot drinks and live music. 7-year-old Lucy had her own ideas for improving Fairview.
I kind of want less stealing, and like they need to make a couple more skate parks because they only have like 3 here.
Crime is part of life in Fairview. Orion Dominic took a break from playing the guitar for some coffee. He and his wife own a home a few blocks away. He says more assistance for street alcoholics might help.
You know, last year we had they had a big police push, and there was a bigger police presence, and that certainly cut down on the crime. That's nice. Hyder is basically a hobo highway from Chester Creek up to Bean's Cafe. So, I mean, we're limited by our location. You know what I mean? It's the nature of where we're located and how this situation is set up. I think the homeless problem is Anchorage's biggest problem right now. Obviously, I think that because I live in this neighborhood.
But he says he loves Fairview, and he thinks it's getting better. That good-natured tendency to love or at least accept the good with the bad in Fairview is a common theme among residents. Mark and Janet Stoneburner have moved to Spinard, but lived in Fairview for 5 years. Mark told the story of a drunk who insisted a party was at their house at 2 a.m. one night and wouldn't quit pounding on the door. He said it was scary. But Janet just called it local color and recalled waiting for the bus, working on a crossword puzzle in the paper.
And this guy with just wild hair, one eye, sees me from about 30 feet away and starts yelling. And he's coming toward me, yelling, waving his arms. What are you doing writing in the newspaper? Who does that? What kind of person writes in the newspaper? I look at him and I go, crossword. Oh, give me four down. And he stood there and did the crossword with me until the bus came and he wandered off.
The characters in Fairview might be part of its charm as well as part of its problem, but historic gems were also revealed at the pop-up museum. Resident Christopher Cross explained the photo display of a man in Fred Astaire-like outfits named Mike Medill, who lived in a red log cabin.
He lived there for ages and ages, and he was an internationally recognized performer, you know, dancer, actor. He gave voice lessons to Morgan Freeman. I mean, this guy knew everybody. And so he was really an amazing kind of gem of Anchorage's history.
I am sorry if they sound the same.
As UAA student Devin Johnson entertained the growing crowd, a display of T-shirts under one of the canopies seemed to capture the sentiment of local residents. People's Republic of Fairview. In Fairview, I'm Lori Townsend.
No Fairview, no cry.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Angela Denning Barnes and Ben Matheson in Bethel, Jocelyn Estes in Anchorage, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Annie Ropeek in Unalaska, and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alex Hotel & Suites, featuring amenities that include a 24-hour airport shuttle, hot continental breakfast, and a walk-in freezer. Information on Alaska resident rates at 1-800-221-7550. The Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnickarm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnickarm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.